This is joint work with Jason Kraft from Boston College, and I recently moved to Lehigh University. So Java has become an important computing platform, and since its very early days, security researchers have scrutinized Java security, and the various vulnerabilities have been identified and fixed. Former models of various aspects of Java security have been proposed, and sometimes with very rigorous machine-checked theorems and proofs. So all this research has contributed significantly to the security of Java. So in this talk, we look at a different aspect of Java security, namely the native methods inside Java classes. So a Java class can have native methods, which are implemented in unsafe languages such as C or C++. And this native code interacts with Java through this foreign function interface called Java Native Interface, or the JNI. So it is well known that the native code is outside of the Java security model. So any bug in the native code could invalidate any safety or security guarantees provided by Java, such as type safety or the Java sandbox model. So due to the fundamental insecurity of native code, the default policy for Java applets, for example, does not allow loading non-local native code. However, there have been already a large number of native code in the Java Development Kit, or the JDK. For example, this java.io.file input string class is just a Java wrapper for C code that invokes system libraries. Another example is that the classes under Java util.zip are just Java wrappers that invoke the popular zlibc compression decompression library. So the important point here is the JDK's native code is trusted by the JVM by default. So if there's any bug inside this part of the code, then it could render the whole JVM unsafe and insecure. So one question to ask is, how large is this trust? Actually, we did a counting in the Sun's JDK 1.6, and there are actually a lot of native code there. It's over 800,000 lines of native code in Sun's JDK 1.6. And as a matter of fact, the native code in the JDK has been on the increase over the years. In JDK 1.4.2, there are approximately 500,000 lines of native code. And then in 1.5, there are over 700,000 lines. In 1.6, there are over 800,000 lines. So given the large amount of native code, it's not hard to imagine there are bugs in the native code. So then some clever hacker can come along, figure out some malicious input to the Java side, and then that input could flow to the C side, trigger the bug and take over the JVM. Okay, here is an obvious example how this can be done using the well-known buffer overflow pattern. So on the top of the slide, there is some Java code, and it's a vulnerable class. And inside that class, there is a native method modified by this native modifier, and it takes an array as an argument. And on the bottom of the slide, that's the C implementation of the native method in that vulnerable class. So in that C code, it actually declares a local buffer of 512 bytes. Then we'll get we'll try to copy the contents of the Java buffer to the local buffer. Clearly, this is unbounded string copy, right? So because the native method in this example is a public native method, so anybody can invoke it with a large buffer and overflow the buffer in the C code and take over the JVM. Right. So it is well known that bugs in the JDK's native code is a threat to Java security, and we believe that all 800,000 lines are just too big to be trusted. So the problem here is how to alleviate the threat. And we believe an important and first step to address the problem is to carry out an empirical study. which is the topic of this talk. The goals of the study include, first, collect evidence that the native code is a realistic threat to Java security so that we can increase awareness of this problem. Second, is we want to collect data to understand the threat, understand the extent of the threat. Finally, we want to characterize bug patterns so that we can use these characteristics to guide the construction of automatic tools. We used a very straightforward approach to carry out this study. So essentially, we used the static analysis tools plus manual inspection. First, to scan common C vulnerabilities, we used a set of off-the-shelf tools, including Splint, ITS4, and FlawFinder. Then there are bug patterns particular to the JNI context. So we built some simple custom scanners to look for those patterns. And those patterns are inferred from the JNI manual. For example, if whenever the JNI manual say do not do A, then we will look for places where A is violated. Right? Okay, all the static analysis tools we use are imprecise and very imprecise. And they have a large list of warnings as a result. So we performed a manual inspection to rule out false positives. To facilitate this process, we use some tools to build an HTML interface for fast navigation of the code. For example, with this interface, by one click, you can find out all the places where a function is invoked. Okay, there are clearly pros and cons of this straightforward approach. One benefit of this approach is we can cover as many bug patterns as we want by using a set of tools instead of a single one. Also, because we use a set of tools, the scanning results are more complete than one single tool. So it's good for collecting empirical evidence. Of course, the obvious downside of this approach is it involves a lot of manual work. And so we cannot possibly cover all 800,000 lines of code. So that's why we limited the scope of the study. We pick the directories that implement the native methods of the classes under java.star and did the empirical study on those directories. We will call those directories target directories. And the target directories include around 38,000 lines of C code. Okay, next I'll describe the results of our study, which include a taxonomy of bugs in the native code of the JDK. Here is one slide summary of the bugs we identified in this study. So in total, we discovered over 100 bugs in the target directories, and many of them are security critical. So some of these, we classify the bugs by bug patterns. Some of these patterns are well known. For example, we found a few race conditions in file accesses. So these are so-called time of check to time of use bugs. Also, we also found a few buffer overflows and many memory management flaws, which mostly are memory leaks, and also lots of insufficient error checking. Some of these bug patterns are particular to the context of the JNI, which I will describe next in more details. So this includes this pattern of mishandling JNI exceptions and the C pointers as Java integers. Okay, first, mishandling JNI exceptions. So we all know Java exceptions. And here is a common pattern of using Java exceptions. We first check for some condition. And if the check fails, the pattern will throw exception. And when the exception is thrown, the JVM will automatically transfer the control to the nearest enclosing catch statement, so that sensitive operation is skipped. And through the JNI interface, C code can also throw exceptions, but the JNI exceptions are much more trickier. So here is the example. On the left is some Java code. it has a native method called C function. And it also has a Java function there, which invokes a C function. And after the Java function invokes a C function, the control is transferred to the C side. And on the C side, it tries to implement the same pattern as the one in the previous slide. So you first check for some condition. If the check fails, you will invoke some this JNI API function throw to throw a Java exception. However, Java exceptions are different. What happens here is the JNI exception, a JNI exception is different. The JNI exception won't be thrown until the C method returns. So what happens here is the sensitive operation will still get executed, and only after that, and only after the control is transferred back to the Java side, the exception will get thrown. So clearly that's a bug. And to fix this bug in this particular example is quite easy. We just put a return statement after the throwing exception statement. And however, things become much more complicated when function calls are involved. So suppose the C function invokes a utility function, okay? And that utility function might throw a JNI exception or might not throw a JNI exception. Then to make it right, it's not a simple matter of putting the return statement after the throwing exception statement. The C function also has to check the two cases of calling the utility function. One is when the exception is thrown, the other is there's no exception. So essentially, the JNI programmers have to implement the mechanism for handling Java exceptions explicitly. And clearly, this is very error-prone. And actually, our study found 11 cases of mishandling JNI exceptions in the target directories. And clearly, this is due to a mismatch between the programming models of exceptions between Java and the JNI. Okay, so next I want to discuss another bug pattern, which we call it C pointers as Java Java integers. Okay, so in this pattern, what happens in JNI programming is very often JNI programs need to store C pointers at the Java side. Okay, however, it's very hard to declare the types of the C pointers in Java. For example, suppose you have a C pointer to a C struct. How do you declare the types of that? How do you declare the type of that pointer at the, in Java? It's impossible. So what's used commonly in JNI programming is that the C code will first cast that pointer to a Java to an integer, then the Java side will just treat it as an integer. Then when Java code passes the C code back, C code will cast it back to the C pointer. Here's a example in the zlib library. Zlib, for example, maintains a zstring struct for keeping the state information of compression and decompression stream. Then a Java deflator object, which invokes the zlib library, needs to store a pointer to this C struct, so that when this object invokes zlib the second time, all the state information is still there. And to do that, it actually uses this pattern of C pointers as Java integers. So from Java's point of view, the integers that represent C pointers are just ordinary integers, right? So therefore, this pattern is unsafe if the Java side can inject arbitrary integers to C that will be interpreted as pointers. And here is an unsafe example from, on the slide, there is an unsafe example from this GIMP toolkit. So it has this GUI library, which has a public native method, setFocus, and which happens to take a window pointer there as input. And notice the type of that window pointer is an integer. So because this is a public native method, anybody, including the attacker, can invoke it with arbitrary integers, and most likely will crash the JVM. And in some cases, it will also enable arbitrary reading. It will enable reading and writing arbitrary locations, because these pointers when passed to the Java side, Java will, when passed to the C side, C will try to read and write memory through these pointers. And in some cases, you can enable reading and writing locations of attacker's choice. And we examined the target directories in the JDK, and we found out there are 38 native methods that accept Java integers and cast them to pointers. In JDK's case, they are actually not security critical because these native methods are declared as private methods, so that attackers cannot invoke them arbitrarily. Of course, there's one mechanism to invoke private methods, which is Java reflection. But the default security policy is to not allow Java reflection. So we don't think this is security critical. However, we still think this should be fixed for the following reasoning. In Java, through Java reflection, we can read and write private fields and invoke private methods. But that's simply a violation of access control rules in Java. And it is still type safe. However, if we put Java reflection and this pattern of C pointers as Java integers together, it will enable attacker to invoke private methods, which will in turn allow the attacker to read and write arbitrary memory locations, which is type unsafe. So this pattern actually enables privilege escalation from allowing Java reflection to reading and writing arbitrary memory locations. So we think this should be still fixed. Okay, so back to the summary of our study. So we found a range of bugs in the target directories, including well-known buffer overflows to patterns unique in this context, such as misusing JNI exceptions. And it's kind of surprising that in just 38,000 lines of code, we found over 100 bugs. Right. So I'll just briefly mention that there are other bug patterns in this part of the code we looked at but did not find the violations, and the details are in the paper. Okay, I want to spend the rest of the talk to talk about some possible remedies and their limitations and possibly and also speculate on future directions. One obvious remedy is to use static analysis tools to find and remove bugs. The static tools we used in the study actually do not scale. All the off-the-shelf tools have very high false positive rates, and it's the same story for our own scripts and scanners. In the end, we spent a large amount of time on manual inspection, which is a very which is prone to human errors, of course. Of course, we think advanced static analysis techniques can help a lot in to reduce false positives, including such as software model checking, abstract interpretation, and many other techniques. And in progress is we are developing data flow analysis tools to find bugs of mishandling JNI exceptions. Here is interesting statistics to predict how many more bugs we can find in the rest of the JNI for these kinds of bugs. So we found 11 violations of these kinds of bugs out of 337 throws in the target directories. And in all the native code, there are around 2,471 throws. So that approximately will give us 80 violations. So that very rough estimate. Okay, another interesting point of I want to make that can help reduce false positives is to perform interlanguage analysis across Java and C. So what happened in our manual inspection is that we often need to go back and forth between Java and C side to decide if a warning is a bug. And here is a real example. So this is native method called the deflate bytes. And it takes three arguments. It takes at least three arguments here, a Java array, and the length of the array, and the offset to the array. So when we inspected this code, we found out there are no range checks on the length and the offset of parameters. So we were wondering, is this a bug? Then in the end, there is a set batch array region function, which copies from the local buffer, out buffer, to the Java array. So when we look at this code, because there are no range checks, so we're wondering whether this is a buffer overrun. But if you think about it more, really depends on how the Java side invokes this native function. And in this particular example, the Java side will invoke this C function only with valid lengths and offsets. And so this is not really a bug. But the point here is, if an analysis only look at the C code without a model of how Java invokes C, then it's impossible to tell whether this is a real bug or not. So it's necessary to perform interlanguage analysis in these kinds of applications. However, most existing source code analysis tools are limited a priori to code written in a single language. So it's important to extend the horizon of analysis to cover multiple languages. And there have been a number of interesting systems in this direction, including our own work. However, much work still needs to be done to make this system scale. Another remedy to address the problem is to use dynamic mechanisms. And we have this system called SafeJNI, which is a mostly dynamic mechanism with a very simple static pointer type system. So at a high level, this system trying to statically reject or dynamically stop dangerous C programs. In more details, it first leverages secured by Nakula and others to provide internal memory safety to the C code. So secured will analyze C programs to find violations of memory safety and insert dynamic checks to those places. And on top of secured, our system also adds extra check-ins at the boundary between Java and C to make sure the data is valid. Because this is a dynamic mechanism, of course it has a performance slowdown. And on a set of micro benchmarks, our system incurs additional 14% to 190% of slowdown. And on the zlib library, incurs additional 74% of slowdown. The major limitation of the system is it does not handle concurrency, which needs to be fixed. And I think there are further rooms to improve on the efficiency side. Also, I'd like to briefly mention our SafeJNI system works on the source level C code. It's also possible to do fault isolation on the assembly level. This is possibly an interesting direction. The final remedy, or the most obvious one, but perhaps involves the most work, is to rewrite the native code in safer languages, such as Java, or safe variant of C, such as Cyclone. And also using better interfaces between Java and C can help reduce errors. One recent example is Gini. Okay, in summary, so I hope our study demonstrated that native code in the JDK is a time bomb to Java security. And we believe in the short term, we should develop scalable and interlanguage static analysis tools to eliminate bugs and also develop efficient dynamic mechanisms to alleviate the threat. In the long term, I believe most of the C code should be converted into Java code, which happens to be one of the long-term goals of this class path, which is an open source alternative to Sun's JDK. Finally, I just want to mention there is a same problem with Microsoft's .NET because of the interaction between managed and unmanaged code. So that's the end. Thank you.
Jonathan Durig, University of Utah. So back on slide 24, you were talking about a false positive, and you said because the Java code never calls this with improper arguments. But before, when you were talking about reflection, right, this method could be called even if it's private using reflection, and the attacker could specifically give it these wrong arguments. So it seems like this may not be a false positive at all. This may just be a disaster waiting to happen when somebody has reflection turned on.
That's a very interesting observation. So I think that you are right. And so the default security policy is to not allow Java reflections. But I think you are right. If with Java reflections, these kinds of methods can be called directly. Yes.
Dave Wagner, UC Berkeley. You found lots of bugs. Did you report them to the Java developers? And I'm curious what the response of the developers were. If so, did they fix the bugs? Did they agree they were a problem? Can you tell us anything?
Right, yeah. So we sent our technical report to them like a couple of months ago. And we exchanged a few emails. They are fully aware of the problem. And so the emails basically I was trying to explain what the problem is, and they were saying, and they didn't quite understand some bug patterns, and so by now I think they are convinced there are problems, and I don't know whether they will fix it or when they will fix it. So that part I don't know.
They're features, not bugs, right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Katrina O'Neill, Fortify Software. I'm just curious why you chose tools such as Splint and Flow Finder for your study, if you could possibly choose the more sophisticated tools that actually perform inter-language analysis.
Right, because they are free. That's the most reason.
Fortify Software has university licenses that are available for free.
Fortify, right?
Sure. So if you want to talk to me later,
after the study, I actually got a free license copy of Fortify, but that's after the study. So I didn't have the energy to do this all over again.
did you check if any of these bugs is actually exploitable?
Yeah, we did, and. A lot of times, when I found a bug, then I will let the other person in the team to inspect it again, and we went back and forth several times to make sure it's really a bug. Yeah.
But well, did you write any piece of code or proof of concept?
Not for all of them, but for a few of them. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much.